researcher actually in the UK who did research where he was giving people a glass of whiskey, and he had set up three different rooms for them to walk into, and one with different music, different settings, completely different environments. And as they walked through each room, they were asked to, at the end of each room, to write down what they thought of the whiskey. And they were describing the whiskey differently in each room. In the rooms that had sort of a very bucolic setting, they were describing the whiskey as tasting grassy.
Hey guys, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice, your favorite behavioral psychology author. And my goal is to simplify neuroscience and behavioral psychology by sharing with you both my own research as well as the work from other leading voices from around the world. Today, I feel fortunate to share with you one of the most delightful and brilliant people I've met this year. Meet Janice Kaplan, a New York Times bestselling author. Janice and I will be exploring her latest book, What Your Body Knows About Happiness and How to Use Your Body to Change Your Mind. We'll be unpacking how to hack your mindset by using your body and what some of the mind-body myths are that must be debunked now. Meet Janice Kaplan. An award-winning journalist, TV producer, Janice, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
I can't wait to explore this conversation around rethinking mind and body connection, what we may have gotten wrong, and what the latest science says that we should be rethinking. So thank you so much for joining me again. Before we dive in, I have to go inside your mind. I have to peel back your beautiful blonde hair and ask you seven questions, either or coffee or tea type questions. Can I do that?
You bet.
Let's do it. Number one, broccoli or French fries?
I have to admit, broccoli. I'm just that kind of person.
It's funny.
I think
I
I've
have my.
revealed everything by now, right? That's the
Yeah,
end.
yeah. That's the end, right? It's so funny because I'm a vegan, and there's this tension in our community about fries because they're like our cheat. Our French fries are like our cheat, right? You can't really have a nasty burger, but you can have some nasty fries. All right, number two, hotel or Airbnb?
I think Airbnb sounds a little homier and more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Number three, cappuccino or latte?
Oh, cappuccino, especially when they do that nice little heart on the top out of the cream.
Doesn't get much better than that, right? So you're in New York at the moment, so this could be a tricky question. Rain or snow?
Oh, snow. Doesn't snow very much here, but snow's so much prettier and you can smile at it. Rain is just dreary.
Yeah, exactly. Number five, swimming in a pool or an ocean?
Oh, the ocean. I love swimming anywhere. It's my favorite sport, but ocean swimming. As long as it's warm, let me clarify, Caribbean or someplace warm, warm ocean swimming is the best.
Yeah, down in Cape Town in the southern part of Africa, some of the water is freezing cold even in the summer. So I totally get you. Number six, podcast or Netflix?
Listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm going to go with podcast.
Awesome. You're in the right place. You are home in this conversation. And number seven, emotion or logic?
Well, see, the whole book is about putting together brain and body. So I'm not sure we can separate them, but I guess emotion, because I think we are driven by our bodies and our feelings far more than we realize.
Well, thank you so much for allowing us to go inside your mind. Mm-hmm. Janice, what a wonderful body of work you put together. I have been slightly obsessed with mind-body work. And, you know, I've got a number of episodes I've done on this, but you take a particularly different look at it because you are a journalist. You know, as a writer, researcher, what took you down this rabbit hole? Because this is not your only interest, right?
Right. Well, I had written a book called The Gratitude Diaries a few years ago, which was, as you said, a nice New York Times bestseller and got a lot of attention. And my focus on that book was to spend a year living more gratefully and see how it might change my life. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, it started a little bit as a literary device that seemed like a fun way to write a book, you know, just spend a year living gratefully. And I was stunned by how it ended up changing my life and how it affected everything, how it changed my relationships, my friendships, my sense of work, everything that I did. And because, as you said, I'm a journalist, I don't just write about my own experiences. I love to do research. And so I talked to lots of people and neurologists and psychologists and Nobel Prize winners and try to pull together. What's fun for me is pulling together different kinds of research and thinking about it in ways that people perhaps haven't before. And this book happened because The Gratitude Diaries was about changing your mindset and how if you rethink things in a different way, reframe situations, look at the world differently, you can make yourself happier and more grateful. But then I discovered, as I'm sure you have found and all your listeners have found too, that there are some days, some moments when you just feel good. You just feel happy and you haven't done a thing. And that happened to me one day. I was on a boat, as it happened. The sun was shining, the water was sparkling, wind was in my hair. And I thought, I'm so happy right now. What is it? And that's what really led me down this rabbit hole, as you said, of trying to figure out what it was and realizing that sometimes our bodies are sending those messages to our minds and trying to figure out then, how do we exploit that a little bit so that we can be happier and put ourselves in the places that will make us happy?
I want to give a shout out to a friend, colleague, Colin Skelton, who really speaks about slowing down and understanding your body. He's going to really love this episode. So shout out, Colin. Let me just take a one step back here. One of the things that it has concerned me about a lot of research is that it's not replicable. And, you know, from the Superman pose to all of the a lot of the pop science is under scrutiny. And I just want to say upfront to all of my listeners that, you know, when we share work like this, part of what I hope you take away from this is that it can give you a wonderful foundation to kind of catapult you into your own journey to try to understand this even better. And if you see this book as a beginning map for you to set you on the right stage, because there's a lot of what I call pop research that is triggered, designed to trigger you to get you interested in the more complex work. So take this conversation and create a map for yourself to go on a journey and make, and this is a quality map. And I'm certain about that because I've read it. So, I share that because there's I have a lot of researchers on from all over the world, and I see that some of the top Nobel scientists are coming under a microscope because their work can't be replicated. So I don't want that to stump anyone. I wanted to inspire you to get on board with this train of research. So let's start with some pop science. Since I put that out there, why is it sitting in a hard chair versus a soft one? How can that influence your decision?
Well, first of all, I just want to say on what you said about the replicability of research, I absolutely agree. And I go in with a bit of a keen eye to some of that. And much of the research has been challenged. And there are even some cases in the book that I talk about where the research has been challenged and challenged again. And then people have looked at it from many different perspectives. And that was particularly true in the smile effect, which we could get to later. But on the hard chairs, that was research that was done out of, it was done, I think, at Yale, and now the lead professor is now somebody who's at the University of Michigan. And he was looking at it from a business perspective. He was having people negotiate, giving them car negotiations to do. And he found that when people were sitting in hard chairs, they negotiated harder than when they were sitting in soft chairs. And it's a surprise, because we don't think of it that way. We don't think of ourselves as being influenced by those things. But our bodies are constantly thinking in metaphors. And that research has been done in many different ways also. There was similar research done out of that lab at Yale, where they gave people resumes to read. And that's kind of a standard psychological test, to give people resumes. And if I gave that to you, you would probably know that, aha, I'm probably checking for unconscious bias here, and I'm not going to be influenced by the person's gender or where they live or ethnicity. But you might not think about whether you're being influenced by the weight of the clipboard. And the research found that people who were given the resumes on heavy clipboards rated the people as being more serious than the people who were given them on light clipboards. Somehow our bodies are sending the message of heavyweight versus lightweight. Again, our brains think in metaphors. They're taking in this information. And great as our brains are, they're just this kind of 3-pound mass sitting up in our skull, taking in all that information. And maybe there overlaps in where they're understanding things. So that feeling that's coming from the hard chair, that feeling that's coming from the heavy clipboard, is getting mixed up in our brain with what we're evaluating or negotiating.
I do want to have some fun with our audience a little bit, because you know, when I think about this research and I think about your wonderful work that you've done, I do love the idea that you highlight research that we can all relate to. Like, for example, wearing a Fitbit or Apple Watch and gym memberships that everyone is so obsessed with, that it could possibly not be making us as happy as we think.
Right. Well, that Fitbit that everybody was obsessed with, and perhaps still is, the idea of 10,000 steps. I think it's been said enough at this point that most of us know that 10,000 steps has no basis in any scientific reality whatsoever. It was made up by people, I believe it was a Japanese company that had developed pedometers some years ago. And some of the research now shows that if you're a professional athlete, if you're a very serious athlete, absolutely you should be measuring, and that's important. But for the rest of us who are going out to exercise for pleasure, for general health, to try to enjoy ourselves a little bit, it can actually be a detriment, because it's giving you a goal. It's telling you something that you have to achieve. You're focused on the end product rather than enjoying the process along the way. So if you go out for a run, if you go out for a walk, and you're enjoying the moment, you're thinking about how your body feels, you're taking the pleasure in the movement, that's very different than if you're going, I have to get in 10,000 steps and I'm only at 4,200. It's a very different experience. So I do think that it's not a bad idea to throw away that watch, or at least don't use it all the time, and see if it changes your experience of exercise.
It's amazing how much, I think I was one of the early adopters with this whole watch, tech wearables. And there are times when I have to really shake myself and say, leave this thing home and go out there and just enjoy a good walk or a run. And I appreciate you affirming that I'm not crazy. Thank you. Thank you so much, Janice. I want to talk a bit about what you've learned about your own mind-body connection and what you're doing differently based on your own research.
Well, I found when I wrote the gratitude diaries that I realized that if I were unhappy, I would actually sometimes physically make myself stop and think about something good. What's the positive of this situation? And I would stand on a street corner and try to make myself figure out what was the good I could see in something. Now I've given myself the opportunity to do it much more simply. There's research that shows that when you sit up straight or when you stand up straight, it's easier to access positive emotions and you're more likely to feel positive. So now sometimes if I'm walking down the street and feeling dreary or down, I will stop and stand up straight and look up and maybe smile. And something as silly and small as that actually sends a different message to your body and, to your mind from your body. And having those little tricks that you know that you can turn things around in a moment actually is very helpful.
One of the things that I love about interviewing the vast spectrum of researchers in this space is, you know, I've interviewed recently a neuroscientist named Dr. Mahamani El Ghabi, who is looking at mental models. So deep in our unconscious mind, if someone sees you smiling, there is something extraordinary that happens in a circuitry in our minds that, as you know, sends off this wild explosion of chemicals in our body to alter us. And I think you mentioned that it's when you shift after your posture change, that's kind of silly. But I think it is fundamental to who we are. And I think that books like yours should be taken more seriously. And I'm at a stage where I feel like it should be taught early. And I want people to buy a couple of these books and share them with someone so that you can read it together. Because I no longer think that this is a luxury to know this stuff. I actually believe it's a necessity. I've become quite dogmatic about it. I've become quite aggressive about sharing this insight. Because for me, you know, when you see people who are on teams and offices and so forth, if you can do something that simple, inspire your colleague to shift that posture and look up and go out in nature and stand in the garden and radically alter their mood. Why are we not making this part of it? And so when you see people's reaction to your work, are you surprised? Aren't you having this effect? Aren't you getting this type of feedback, like this level of extraordinary energy?
I do get that feedback, thank you. And it's part of what's so meaningful to me when people talk about how just having this change of perspective has been so important to them. And I certainly heard it from the Gratitude Diaries, and I'm starting to hear it from What Your Body Knows About Happiness also. So I do think that sometimes there are things that when you read them, they almost seem obvious. Like if you smile, you're going to be happier. But if somebody hasn't said it to you, you might not stop to think about it. And yeah. I think part of the power of this is that it makes sense. It fits in with what we feel. The power of touch. I was having a disagreement with my husband last night over something so ridiculous I can't begin to tell you. He's a wonderful human being. He got into bed. He was clearly still annoyed. I could have come in to explain to him why he was wrong, why we should not be arguing. Instead, I came in and I just reached over and I rubbed his arm for a second. And you could just feel the tension in the room disappear and everything was okay again. There's a great power to something like touch. Our bodies are meant to be physical.
Wow.
That 2 seconds changed the atmosphere, changed how we felt, made us both able to go to sleep calmly that night in a way that probably a 20-minute conversation might have also reached. But the power of the physical should not be overlooked.
You know what? I have to be honest. I just had a light bulb moment. And, you know, sometimes I do operate in the logic too much, you know. And I'm going to challenge myself to use some of the tools in this book in tense moments where I feel that my logic could help break through. And I'm going to use it. I'm going to grab my partner's arm, or I'm going to sit with a colleague when I can see that they're clearly distressed. And I'm not going to try to force. There are going to be times when I'm going to be tempted to force logic through, and I'm going to step back and use some of your insights from this book. So, you know, what I want to do now is I want to create a little bit of a resource library, a body influencing the mind. Let's come up with 5 novel things that people can do from your book. We're not going to obviously share them all because we want people to go out and buy the book. But let's share 5 that are you find really interesting and practical. You shared a couple, but let's see if we can come up with 5. And we're going to call this Genesis Resource Library for inspire more happiness using your body.
Sure. Well, one that's very simple and surprising, and it goes with what we were talking about at the beginning about those soft and hard chairs, is there's research that shows if you hold something warm, you feel more kindly and warmer towards people than if you hold something cold. So, you know, if you're having a party, instead of just always serving cold drinks, maybe have a couple of hot toddies around there. Or if you're feeling tense yourself, you know, I used to always just hold onto a cup of tea and just feel the warmth. And it actually has an effect on your body. There's research about flowers. So number 2, bring some flowers into your house. It doesn't have to be expensive ones. Go to the local grocery store. But we seem to be hardwired to respond to flowers. And it may be from evolutionary biology back in the days when we were out in the fields. And if we saw flowers, it meant that fruit and berries weren't far behind. And so there was an excitement and a pleasure that came from flowers. So I would recommend that be aware of nature and the power of nature and the power of being outside. There's research that shows that being around water for 2 hours a week has a dramatic effect on well-being. And it doesn't have to be the ocean. You're lucky enough to be near one, but it can be a lake or a pond. Or if you're truly stuck inland, get one of those little waterfalls, electric waterfalls that you can put in your living room, one of those little ones. There's something about the calming power of water that has a profound influence on us. And many cities in America and probably around the country and around the world also are reclaiming their waterfronts, often at great cost. And at first I would hear about this and be really wary of why are they doing that? But it's such so important, and it changes communities and it changes how people feel. So if you have the ability to get near water, do that. I've lost how many we're at, but.
We're at number four.
Do think about the things that you're touching and feeling and how they are influencing you. I tell the story in the book about buying a new iPhone and not liking the iPhone at all, feeling that it was just not working well, and going back to the store and the person at the store being smart enough at the Genius Bar to say, "I think it's the case that you bought." And I said, "The case? What do you mean?" He said, "I'm finding that people who buy that case," and it was just a hard sort of plastic case. He said, "They're not happy with it. Try this one instead." And he gave me a soft silicon case to put around it. And all of a sudden I went home and I thought, yeah, this phone is working much better now. I really like the technology of this phone. Look how great that camera is. You would think my brain would be smart enough to pay attention to the technology of the phone, but it was being influenced by the fact that with that other case, it felt clumsy in my hand. And I was getting the message that this phone is clumsy. And as soon as I put something soft in silicon, my brain was getting the message of comfort and that everything was okay. And all of a sudden, I was able to appreciate the function of the phone. So be aware of the things that are affecting you that way. And I think we said, you know, sit up a little straighter, look up, give a smile, and let yourself relax a little bit sometimes into just letting yourself feel better.
When you were doing this research, Janice, was there a moment where you were kind of in awe, where you were like, you know, the body is extraordinary. Like the body's ability to influence the mind is simply extraordinary. Did you have any highlight moments you want to share on your journey researching for this book?
An interesting story is that I am neither Christian nor religious, but whenever I travel, and particularly when I'm in Europe, I love to go into churches. And I always find myself inspired by the power of churches. And I never knew why. And as I was researching this book, I realized the power of architecture and certain kinds of spaces and certain kinds of soaring images to change how we feel. And I realized that's why I love going into those old churches, because they understood that. And anytime you walk into a room, you're affected by the fact that the ceiling is low or high, that the lighting is good or bad. And I was really stunned by how powerful those forces around us, the environmental forces, the architecture that we experience. There was something similar on that, along those lines, about food, where there was a researcher actually in the UK who did research where he was giving people a glass of whiskey, and he had set up three different rooms for them to walk into, and one with different music, different settings, completely different environments. And as they walked through each room, they were asked to, at the end of each room, to write down what they thought of the whiskey. And they were describing the whiskey differently in each room. In the rooms that had sort of a very bucolic setting, they were describing the whiskey as tasting grassy, and the lighting was changing how it was. And he said what was amazing was they were holding the same glass the whole time.
Wow.
So at the end, they knew nobody had tricked them. They were tricking themselves. And that's pretty powerful to realize. And I was really struck by his research in that.
You know, as people go out and get your book, I want to say to you that part of what inspires me to wake up every day and do this podcast is guests like you who have so much enthusiasm and command over your work and who are just curious, who go out there and pursue finding insights that can radically alter our life. And I want to thank you so, so much for the joy that you brought to this work and to this podcast. Any final closing words that you would like to share for somebody who may have a bad posture, for somebody who's not smiling enough, for somebody who's got a hard case on their phone? Any final tips as they go out to buy your book?
Well, I think what I discovered with both the Gratitude Diaries and What Your Body Knows About Happiness is that having some of this information, some of these tricks at your disposal, give you a sense of control over your own life. And so often we feel out of control, and we feel that events or situations are determining how we feel. And to realize that, no, you have that power to be a little bit happier, to make yourself a little bit happier, a little bit more grateful, at any situation and in any event, I think is very important for all of us, because it's how we want to feel. It's how we want to be able to return.
Janice Kaplan, thank you so much for joining us on the Brain and Brand Show.
My great pleasure. Thank you. This was fun.